Track 11, more Christmas tales from the Victorian Vicarage. This month, our resident historian takes another look back at his great-grandfather, Benjamin John Armstrong, vicar of East Dereham's Christmas diary entries, which captures the warmth, sadness and social values of the Victorian era.
In last year's Christmas issue, I offered some insights into what a Victorian Christmas was like in a country town by selecting various entries from the diary of my great-grandfather, Benjamin John Armstrong, vicar of East Dereham from 1850 to 1888. This was well enough received to prompt me to do something similar this year. Those entries were all from the three volumes of his diaries which have been published, two edited by my father and the third by me. The published entries are part of a much larger document that has been passed down the generations, totaling 11 volumes of almost daily entries. The unpublished entries contain plenty of interesting material, much excluded by my father for fear of giving offence to descendants of those mentioned in less than complimentary terms. When I edited the most recent edition, I wasn't so constrained. The passage of time had, I felt, robbed them of their capacity for giving offence. But the sheer volume of entries meant the 300-plus pages of the published work represented just a fraction of the whole. Someday, maybe an academic institution will ask to publish the entire work. Were they to do so, I might find the time to turn my attention to the 9 volumes of my great-great-grandfather's diary. This year, very few of the entries have been published before. This time, I have included a few extracts relating to family issues that demanded his attention despite the business of the festive season. December 30th, 1852. Entertained 40 of our parishioners at an evening party with the view of promoting peace, goodwill and amity among them and teaching them to rejoice when the church rejoices. They remained until 3 a.m. and were highly pleased. Nevertheless, some few held back from a company, which was of necessity somewhat mixed. How impossible it is to discriminate the line of demarcation in the society of a country town. One of these few was only of late years admitted into society himself. December 25, 1854. My happiness at this joyful festival somewhat shaded by receiving an anonymous letter reflecting on my curate, insinuating, in fact, that he was given to drink. Neither myself, the clerk with whom he lodges, or the church warden are cognizant of the circumstance. Note, sadly the anonymous correspondent proved correct. December 21, 1855. The few days before Christmas are perhaps the busiest of the year. There are 400 loaves to be rightly given away, an endowed clothing charity to be dispensed, a voluntary one of 250 members to be cashed up, and the tickets distributed, Christmas dinners in Dereham and in home to be given, the stipends of the masters and mistresses of the schools to be paid, the festival music to be practised, the turkeys to be sent to London friends, the extra amount of weekly soup to be given, and the church to be tastefully decorated with wreaths. This year we hope to have our dear parents with us at the festive season, and my darling little girls are getting up a famous Christmas tree, glittering with cheap presents for all. Note, in his foreword to the most recent published edition of the diary, Under the Parson's Nose, Lark's Press, 2012, Professor Sir Diarmaid MacCulloch described the role of Anglican clergy at the age thus: as much local governors and social workers as spiritual pastors. The entry above says it all. December 25th, 1855. The pleasures of this festival greatly augmented by the presence of my dear parents. In the evening we had a Christmas tree to which the singing boys, the choir, and the first class of girls were admitted, for each of which there was a trifling present suspended from the boughs. Note, Sadly, the joy of Christmas was followed by the death of his baby daughter, Gertrude, taken ill on Boxing Day, who died 2 days later. A reminder of the frequency of infant mortality in those days. December 23, 1856. In the morning, decorating the church with darling Helen, his eldest daughter, and the schoolgirls. In the afternoon, distributing soup to 40 families. In the evening, after prayers, finishing my sermon for the coming festival. December 24, 1856. All day making preparation for the festival, in which I found, as usual, more talkers and advisers than real helpers. December 23, 1857. Close as we are to Christmas, the weather has continued so mild that no frost has killed even the most tender plants. Geraniums and fuchsias are still in bloom. Strawberries have actually been gathered, and the birds sing in the woods. I never remembered anything like it. The week employed as usual in taking orders for Christmas dinners for the poor, in decorating the church, and in arranging music for the coming festival. December 25, 1857. We might have been in Madeira for the beauty of the weather. The sun shone on the holly berries and made them look like blood. In the evening, Mary Hales and my curate joined us and the children. A selection from the National School were admitted to the Snapdragon and Magic Lantern in the evening. December 31, 1860. The choir supper at the Vicarage of Good Christmas Fair, after which the division of the collection amounting to £12. This is to the satisfaction of all parties, the remainder of the evening spent in songs and Shakespearean recitations until the muffled peal rang out the old year and the regular the new one in. December 23, 1862. Though this is the busiest time of the year, performed my promise of taking Bertie, his youngest son, to meet Lord Hastings' hounds at Elsing Hall. It was a pretty sight, the huntsmen and dogs in front of the picturesque and ancient mansion, his lordship driving to the meet, with four in hand, and pinks clustered about on the green sward under the ancestral trees. The hounds, having been shown into a small wood, found instantly Reynard bolting out of one end almost as they went in at the other. As this was the edge of a larger heath, and being open country, we were able to join the run at tremendous pace, reminding me of old days with the queens and warming up one's blood. It fared, as they say hereabouts, to do me good. Note, although Armstrong shot and fished throughout his life, he gave up hunting following his ordination. Prior to that, he had hunted regularly with the Queen's staghounds, earning some opprobrium in the Times for leaping over the Great Western Railway in full pursuit as a train approached. Although he cleared it, another didn't, and the train was derailed, to the disgust of the leader writer. December 25, 1862. It was a hard day in a large church without help. He had no curate at the time. Three weddings, morning service and 100 communicants, afternoon service and christenings, finishing with a funeral. December 12, 1868. Mr. Arthur Nelson wrote to me asking to become a suitor for my dear Lily, his younger daughter. This is quite a new feature in one's life. The time does not seem long since one was involved in one's own love affairs, and now I have to play paterfamilias. Although there is no objection to the young man personally, yet the letter admitted of only one reply, seeing he is not of age, is not being trained for any profession, and his family, I fear, not well off, wrote as kindly as I could, and believe that Lily is not so hard hit that she will soon get over it. Note, he was wrong. It was clearly a love match. More than 5 years later, Lily was still trying to gain paternal approval for the match, and failing to do so, the couple eloped just before Christmas in 1864. Maybe the diarist had a point. Nelson became bankrupt and was kept afloat only by accessing the marriage portion, which the diarist had grudgingly allowed Lily to have after the event. She died giving birth to their second child, and Nelson continued to go through the allowance while depending on the diarist and his wife to bring up the children, whom he rarely visited. December 18, 1869. This week I have visited every cottage in Hoe, supplied them with coals and most of them with meat. January 11th, 1870. The ladies of Dereham gave a large juvenile party at the assembly room with a large Christmas tree loaded with toys. Stayed a couple of hours. December 25, 1884. At Hoe for the afternoon service, we found that the stovepipe had slipped and that the smoke, instead of going up the chimney, all came into the church, rendering a service impossible. So with dear wife, who acts as organist, could only return to Dereham. John, his elder son and by then curate, and his wife dined with us, and the grandchildren were all with us. Quite a patriarchal affair. December 30th, 1884. Mr. and Mrs. Hyde gave a ball and asked us to it, but I have great exception to dancing the old year out and the new one in. My wife and Helen thought so too, so none of us went. Note. Given that earlier years he had been quite happy to entertain and be entertained until 3 a.m., I suspect that this decision was more a reflection on his diminishing powers. Things didn't always go to plan. As his father declined, the diarist took his responsibilities as acting head of the family seriously. December 30th, 1872. It is most reluctantly that one must go to London at this time, but circumstances connected with my sister demanded my presence there. It seems that an adventurer calling himself the Duc de Roussillon, under cover of affording information in the compiling of her work on the French palaces, has succeeded in obtaining considerable sums of money from her whilst she insists on the validity both of the obligation and the title. Found the servants had been in the habit of conveying money and letters during her long illness. In short, a crisis had occurred which rendered prompt action indispensable. December 31st, 1872. Called on the Duke and left a message, he being in Paris, so they said, that he was denied the house. Put a detective on his trail, gave the butler a month's warning with loss of character to any future master if he carried more messages to the Duke. The Christmas season was always going to be busy for a conscientious cleric in a country town with not just his church duties but also the social responsibilities that were his lot. Add to those the family issues, the death of one daughter, the elopement of another, and the fleecing of his sister, all at Christmastide. And the diary presents a picture of the warmth, the sadness, and the social values of its time. Dickens for real.